Welcome. I'm glad I'm not the only one thinking WKRP jokes. Just, I had to say that. God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. I hadn't actually thought about doing this presentation originally. This sort of came to me when I was at Ithaca College. We would get a steady stream, I would say pretty much daily, of people telling us that, via Twitter usually, sometimes on Facebook, that, wow, Ithaca College just gets social media and higher ed. They get that they have to actually talk to and with us. And I had never really thought about it as such. It just sort of realized that when I was thinking about doing social media for the college, that I didn't know how to communicate without sounding like somebody. It was there. And so I started thinking about it and realized that unconsciously I had really crafted something that was particular to the institution, a voice that to me resonated with what Ithaca College sounded like collectively, and apparently it resonated with a lot of other people. So anyway, that's what led me to this place. So, voice, what's a voice? And by the way, just so you know, this is the fluff piece of the day. I'm probably not in metal competition, but you know, I'm like the Jamaican bobsledders over here. So this will probably not change your institutional plan at all, but it's nice to know. So what do you mean by voice? The voice of your institution, it's not so much the elevator speech, but it's the tone and the cadence of it. It's what sounds comfortable. It's what your various constituent audience hear and think, yeah, Ithaca, yeah, that's good, I like that, I'm comfy there, I remember that. Or I want to go there, or I hope my kid goes there. So the voice is really a conversational extension of your brand. It's all that work you spent doing brand identity, all that time and effort to establish your marketing platform so that you could say, this is who we are, this is what we do, this is what we're about. And it's turning that into someone who had all those properties and then like had to go to a cocktail party and discuss it. So how do you determine that? How do you know what that is? Well, there are a lot of factors, not the least of which is listening to your environment. I grew up in Ithaca, New York, and was at Ithaca College for 8 years. And I knew, simply by virtue of living there, just by gleaning from the institution, some pretty important things about it. A few rules to that. Be true to your school. Know what it is that your school does best. Ithaca College is a performance school. When I was a kid, I knew three things about it. I knew that they did a lot of plays, I knew that there were a lot of musicians, and I knew that they played football because the coach lived across the street from me. Now, all three of those, you know, that's people on a stage, that's people performing, that's putting it out there. And once I started working at Ithaca, it became clear to me that pretty much all of the programs, everything that the institution did, everything that we encouraged our students to do, was about performance. So, having identified that, you know, Ithaca's kind of showy. It's kind of jazz hands. And the only way people know that is because in your tweets, in your Facebook posts, what have you, you inflect this voice, this sound, this kind of, you know, you're not afraid to be funny, not afraid to have a little fun with people. And, you know, nothing sort of identifies you as a person rather than a machine, quite like humor. And talking like a person is really essential. People are so used to this institutional edifice. They're so used to just running up against a wall. You know, I mean, like, oh, that's the institution and I can't go there. They respond really positively if you give them something to work with. And someone who's friendly and conversational and whatnot can do that. You want to be careful. You want to make sure you're matching tone for tone. Most people, when they're on Twitter or Facebook, they're just kind of musing, especially on Twitter. And TweetDeck was like the greatest invention in my life because I could just sort of, you know, put my ear to the ground and hear what people were talking about Ithaca all over the place. And they would say things, often just sort of idly, like, oh, you know, I miss fall in Ithaca from when I was a student there. And, you know, you just put up a little photo there of fall in Ithaca, and they get all musy and give you money, and it's great. It's a great way to talk to people. But they're not always just idly musing like that. Sometimes it's more serious. Sometimes, you know, oh, you know, I can't register for classes. This was a chronic one at IC. There were some registration issues a while back. I can't register. I'm struggling. I'm up at 7 a.m. I can't get my classes. This is a nightmare. you know, so you change the voice a little bit. You want to be sympathetic and you want to be helpful. Tread lightly, because there are hot button issues out there. And for whatever reason, there's always someone spoiling for a fight someplace. Usually you can avoid it. Usually you can deflect it. And the fact is, if you've done the first three steps, you've made some friends online. You have people who trust you as the voice of the institution, who identify with you. And they go from being potential critics to being advocates. So that really makes a big difference when you've got someone really pushing your buttons. That said, if someone's really got an issue, if it's a legitimate concern, a gripe, whatever like that, make sure you're directing them to the right people immediately and not trying to solve it yourself. And finally, listen to direct feedback and the back channel. They're two different kinds of feedback. People are a little more open in one than the other. But it does help you shape, the responses help you shape your voice in like the next iteration as you're learning. It's always evolving. It's always changing. If it's not working, you're going to know about it. Why does it matter? Who cares, this voice? These kids, they come to school. They give us the money. We teach them the stuff. They learn. They go. What? What? Well, it isn't always that easy. Your institution doesn't control the web beyond your borders. People are already having these conversations. This isn't optional. And most of you know this. You've done this kind of stuff before. But the simple fact is, it never hurts to repeat that, you know, we're not the ones controlling the message. The message existed long before us. And people were already talking about us. We just have the capacity to actually listen now. And so it's more important to be aware of how you engage with these audiences. It's more important to notice what your tone is and how you're responding. Do you sound sort of petulant because everybody's complaining about the weather, or, you know, the fact that the catalog is hard to read or what have you? You don't want to get yourself in that situation. Broadcasting is tedious. And at my new job, where they're a little behind in social media, they're sort of proud of themselves for broadcasting everything on Twitter and Facebook. And I'm just now getting to the point with them where I can convince people, look, all you're doing is sending out another news feed. You're not telling anybody anything they don't already know. Moreover, if you've gotten people on board, if you're in conversation with people, if people have needs and you meet them, if they have concerns and you listen, they're going to listen to you and they're going to like you, and then they'll take what you put out there and then they'll push it out. Friend casting is just the way we all get news now. I mean, everything I do my best to read the paper every day, but the simple fact is half the stories I read, someone, you know, forwarded me on Facebook or what have you. So we want to be one of those stories. And more than anything else, it's just another opportunity to shape your brand. The brand, as you know, is living, it's breathing, it's always changing in the hands of the consumers as well as those of us who are trying to push it. And this is another way to engage people in an area that maybe they're more comfortable in. You know, people won't always say things when they come to your campus and write on the comment cards or what have you. But they're thinking them elsewhere. They're thinking them afterwards. And this is an opportunity to engage them at that moment. Now, once you start to establish the voice, once you get to know where your voice is, what shapes it, you put yourself in a position where you actually can address a whole bunch of different issues. And when I was at IC, I found that Twitter, for me, was really where I was most comfortable in contending with audience issues, concerns, things people were excited about, what have you. So these are just some of the examples of what we did. We would acknowledge new students. It's always important when people are out there talking about, you know, oh, I got in. And, you know, they also probably got into five or six other places that I wasn't following. But there's no reason we can't engage them here. You know, and this is one thing, you know, every time someone would get in, I always put up a little something, have a little fun with them. But we had people come in the last couple of years who would tell us, you know, you guys are the only people paid any attention when I was excited about coming here. Nobody else was listening. Nobody else engaged me. I had a mother who, some government muckety-muck in the state of Massachusetts, and had been musing about where her kid was going to go for months. And at each point, I just sort of interacted. And, you know, and when he got in, I said, yeah, that's really great. I really think you guys will fit in well here, blah, blah, blah. And in time, the kid ended up coming, and the mother told me, you guys are the only ones who paid any attention. No one else was listening. And it's an easy fix. Campus notifications are always good. You know, you build these elaborate systems and whatnot to get the message out, but a lot of people are just following Twitter or Facebook. So, you know, emergency notification system, try to look surprised. Academics, a little tough to push academics sometimes at 140 characters, but it can be done, especially the fun stuff. And there's a lot of fun stuff with child development, psychology kind of stuff at Ithaca. So we would always push little bits like that. Be seasonally relevant. April Fool's Day is a lot of fun. And so one year, because I couldn't do some big elaborate web thing, I just started doing a Twitter thing on one of our new integrated courses, because we're trying to do more interdisciplinary at IC. And so I said, you know, one of IC's new integrated courses, Literature in the Age of Twitter, aims to discover the 140 character soul of great works, e.g., and then there were a whole bunch of them. This was kind of my favorite of Mice and Men. We did one for Ulysses and a bunch of others. Ulysses was fun, you know, snockery in one word or two. And that led to some funny things, some little back and forth. When you start to take on the voice, people begin to interact with the voice and not just the institution, and it gets a little surreal, like this one. This is in response to all the literature ones this girl wrote. And so, you know, you just got to kind of roll with it once you've got yourself in there. And by the way, this wasn't anything, I wouldn't say this was officially sanctioned by the university that I started doing it this way. We simply had a conversation. There was a big committee on campus, a Facebook task force, and it was in charge of social media policy and opportunities and whatnot. And we put together a big proposal, and it died on some vice president's desk someplace. And there was a void. I just walked into it. You know, my boss was amenable. I'm like, I'm going to go do this now. She's like, go. You know, it's your ass. So so we just did it, and it got a very favorable response. I mean, nothing succeeds like success, right? You know, as soon as it wasn't called anyone's attention in any sort of senior position until it was well on its way to doing really well. So, it's always good to share your press. It's funny, people will sort of idly complain about a school or about whatever, a job, until they see something written about it in the mainstream press, and then they're like, yeah, it's my school. Yeah, my school, woo! I live in the Deep South now, and every Saturday afternoon is just a lot of, woo, my school, woo! So I'm sort of adjusting to that now. But this is actually, it's funny, actually, looking at this, is actually the very last thing I ever tweeted for IC, and I only knew about it because I was flying back and forth to this new job. This is a fun one. Dealing with the peculiar habit people have of blaming or cheering your school for things you cannot possibly control. I just love that. This was like a daily event at IC. People would muse about things, and the weather was a big one. People were always like, why is it snowing? Why is it raining? Why is it too sunny today at Ithaca College? What have you done to me? And this one was funny. This was right after Cornell was in the Sweet 16, and they lost. And they were like, kid, get a grip. You know, like, there's fun stuff going on in town. It snows a lot there, not as much as Syracuse or someplace, but it snows enough that people get irritated. And we got a huge mass of complaints one day because we wouldn't close. And these are kids who were like walking 100 yards from the dorm, you know, to the dining hall. And like, you know, we got people who work there who had to drive 30 miles in from the country, you know, riding on the back of a snowplow. But, you know, we just they couldn't get their heads around it. So sometimes you just got to diffuse them a little bit, because if you get in a pissing match with them, then you lose. Then the voice loses. You got to stay humble, even when they're giving you the love. You know, awesome approach to Twitter. Yeah, you see his boy. Now the opposite of humble is hubris, and the voice got kind of big for me. I got to the point where I could sort of dream in the voice a little bit. And was thinking about it more often than I should have. And so we were getting a lot of awards. Kids were winning all kinds of stuff, man. Fulbrights and things. And it seemed like there was just so many. And so I wanted to express, you know, just the volume, the total volume of all these great awards. We were just like inundated with this stuff. So I tweeted this. Took about 30 seconds before the first one came in. So you're saying that the degrees are worthless the minute they're printed? Shit! Oh, no, I meant the volume and the numbers and the... Fuck it. You know, it's just, I was ruined. So, but, you know, it happens. It happens if you've got the feel for it. You know, you've got to kind of watch that it doesn't get away from you. because, you know, the voice will turn on you. Now, that used to be the end, but then I moved, and I needed an epilogue, and it's the only epilogue picture I could find. I don't know. What's an epilogue look like, right? I was doing my thing there at Ithaca, and an opportunity came along, and I had to say goodbye to beautiful, serene, sophisticated, hippie-laden Ithaca, and embrace the more beguiling charms of New Orleans, where I replaced this man as director of web strategy at UNO. That's a joke. He works at Tulane. And it struck me that I didn't really know the school. I found myself with a handicap I'd never had before. I knew about IC. I grew up 500 yards from the office I ended up working in. UNO, I didn't really have that benefit. I knew a few things on paper. I knew that it was the first integrated public university in the South. That's cool. I knew that it had a lot of really funky programs like naval architecture and an urban studies program, of course, was, or an urban planning program, rather, that was like the gold standard right now because they got a living lab. They got a 300-year-old city they're rebuilding. It's kind of cool for them. You know, and I knew that, by and large, it was the school that pretty much created the middle class in New Orleans. It empowered a lot of people who had always been outside. You know, things changed a little slower down there. And this was the school that this was the school that really enabled a lot of people to have a much more vibrant existence. But that was all I knew. I didn't know what the place sounded like. I didn't know, you know, there's always metaphors going around. You know, people always talk about New Orleans. Well, New Orleans is, you know, and they always invoke the music and the food and, you know, gumbo. The hell does gumbo sound like? You know, like, you know, what am I going to do with that? So, you know, I found myself sort of in a bit of a crisis. My first month there, I was like, what the hell am I going to do? You know, this was my baby. This was my, you know, and I was like this kid, you know. Like, wait a minute, I used to know how these things worked. And I don't anymore. Took me a little while, and we had a little chaos. Our chancellor was fired by the LSU board exactly 1 month after I got hired. There was some bloodletting. And when things started to calm down a little bit, I sort of backed up a little bit. I got a little less panicky. I thought, all right, what do you know? Why do you know what you know already, and how can you work it here? Again, listen all the time. It's a fairly big campus, kind of spread out. A lot of people don't actually live there. So I had to go around and start poking my head in and figuring out what people are doing. The Alumni Magazine, which isn't technically an alumni magazine, but it's an alumni magazine, that's a great place to sort of glean what it is people are concerned about. Not so much what the articles are or whatever, what we're trying to promote, but what people are actually, you know, really getting angry about. UNO switched to Division III this year, which angered a lot of alums to the point that they probably played some role in the chancellor's dismissal. And the thing is, you know, it was a D1 school that was getting like 500 people a game. You know, nobody was supporting it. No one was there. Chronicle Higher Education said something like all but 14 D1 schools lost money last year. Any sensible person would know you don't spend money when you don't have it on, you know, huge stadiums that no one goes to. But people love it. People who are vocal and people who spend money as alums really loved being in D1. And so it's the kind of thing that shapes the tone of the voice, because the voice can't be so flippant about it, like, look, jackass, you weren't going to win anything anyway. You can't really say that. You know, and telling them to embrace D3, you know, like, Ithaca College is a great D3 athletic school. D3 in the Deep South, you just might as well be talking, you know, Eskimo. I mean, they don't know what you're talking about. D3 sports? What? If it's not on TV, if I can't be in the bar on Saturday, woo! It doesn't exist. So that's part of the education right now. Attend a class, go to group meetings, go to a protest, go to a pub crawl, something where you're hearing people in the environment of the university, in the culture that they are part of creating and changing at all times. And when all else fails, just bring it down to something they can all agree on. Gumbo, maybe not so much, but jazz, yeah, jazz. Jazz in New Orleans, it's everywhere. You can't get away from it. It's in the stores as you walk in. It's coming from, it's the airport, for God's sake. And everywhere you go, it's playing constantly. Except this one coffee shop up by UNO that's playing like cheesy fusion. And I just want to shake them. I'm like, you live in New Orleans, for the love of God. Will Louis Armstrong kill you? Jeez Louise. So that's the voice. That's Guided by Voices. And I'll take any questions you might have.
What happened to the Ithaca Twitter account when you left?
Oh, I'm sorry. And there's a mic up here. Y'all might want to try and, because we're doing podcasting, so not to get you out of your seat and, you know, but get out of your seat.
What happened to the Ithaca Twitter account when you left? Like, did your voice scale for the institution, or when you left, was the sort of humor and humanity gone?
They dragged it out the back and shot it, you know? No. No, actually, it was funny. There was a young guy that got hired in a different position, actually, who had been one of our biggest boosters on Twitter and in Facebook when he didn't even work at IC. And he'd been hired a few months earlier. And he was just sort of a natural one to slot in, because part of what had attracted him to the school was this, you know, the fact that he felt that we really got social media. So he was sort of a natural one to slip into that. I believe they're actually hiring a permanent person who this will be part of their, and this was just a little part of what I did, but I think someone else will probably end up doing it. But yeah, it seems to have translated pretty well. People expected it. You know, people got used to a certain friendliness and a certain boosterism, but in that kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of way, without it just being sort of straight up blah, blah, rah, rah. I think that helped. That'll help transition anyone into that spot. So. Anybody else? All right. Well, thank you very much. Oh, one more.
Nope, I'm going to bring you a mic. That I hope this working. It is working.
Well, I need a Phil Donahue mic. Here you go. You
work in the web development department. Correct?
I'm a director of web strategy, so I'm in marketing.
Okay. How much does admissions play in the Twitter field, both back at Ithaca or at the new place?
At Ithaca, it didn't initially, and I know that there's been some talk there about how they might better do that. The marketing communications team at Ithaca College was sort of based on the idea of centralizing marketing control. And taking it out of the exclusive hands of it. Admissions still plays a very big role there. It's a tuition-driven school, much like UNO. Much of this comes down to personalities of individuals involved, you know, in making friends. Relationship management is everything, just like it is anywhere else in an institution. But getting buy-in pretty much came from A, the fact that nobody else was doing it, and B, much of the messaging came down to things that weren't specific to admission, you know. Ithaca College is very integrated with the community, with the city of Ithaca. Obviously, there's a healthy alum support. So it's not just recruitment all the time. So we wanted to be in a sort of centralized position. Now, that said, I would often, during various points in the cycle, go to the marketing communications person who handles the admission account and get from her things that are, you know, timely, what have you. There's nothing wrong with being timely and really staying on top of it. And you can integrate that into the voice, you know.
How often did you tweet?
I would try to do it at least a couple of times a day. You can flood. I mean, as we're seeing with the HE Web 10, you know, it's pretty easy to saturate. But also, too much would get to the point of becoming a distraction, I think, for me personally, because I'd just be trying to be clever all the damn time, and it would invariably bite me in the ass. So. I really wanted to keep it sort of to a minimum, but also it's just easier to maintain like that. You know, I mean, how many pithy statements do you really come up with in the course of a day? So I tried to keep it at a minimum. I've seen in a couple cases that I see at least now it seems to be a little bit more active, although that may be specific to given days where they're doing programming. I know they did the big move-in day where they had a lot of people tweeting in about move-in day, but that seemed like it was really successful. So.
I
aggregated it only insofar as I would keep track for my own purposes of sort of ongoing kinds of conversations. And then I would sort of annotate, is this a parent, or is this a student, is this an alum, kind of thing. So no particular software, more just me sort of being sort of grandfathering it, you know?
You know, kind of related to that, is anybody here using a paid listening solution like Radian 6 at their institution? Somebody, wow, first one, I've been asking this question for a year. You're the first one I've seen who's done that. So how does it work? Is that? All right, yeah, I've been actually having conversations with Radian 6 because their pricing structure doesn't fit in with my absolutely zero budget. So I need to see the value beyond something like social mention or building, like I have built a NetVibes page at my institution that just pulls in everything that's happening out there. Right. And I've been yet to be convinced by Radian 6 that it's worth the extra money. So I'm still, you know, to me, I'm gonna be interested when higher ed actually starts to do that. So another question here.
Did you monitor any of your competitor schools' Twitter feeds to kind of differentiate, to make sure you were differentiating yourself?
Yeah, a little bit. Obviously, you know, you can't do anything in Ithaca without being aware of Big Red. I mean, it consumes all the oxygen in the room, basically. They're just huge. They suck at Twitter. They've gotten a little better. I remember one, they put one out, and I can't actually remember what it was about, but it was funny. And it was so, I was so surprised that it was funny that we were tweeting like, hey, look who lightened up. You know, just had to mess with them a little bit. Look, they got a huge endowment. They don't need me. But yeah, and we were listening, you know, when we started, wasn't too far away from when Colgate decided they were going to have a kid tweeting the entire year, like a freshman. And they stuck it, I think they had it on the homepage. And it was an interesting idea. It wasn't fully fleshed out, but I was aware of it. And so that was kind of what spawned me actually to start thinking about what other people are saying, especially in the region, you know, because, you know, we're all kind of living in the same spot. There's a lot of schools jammed in that area. But by and large, you know, it was impressive to me just how distinct the Ithaca College voice was, you know, and how much it didn't really bear a lot of resemblance to anything around. And I'm hoping to find that, and I'm starting to now at UNO. I mean, the thing at UNO is, in the wake of Katrina, for whatever reason, I know the reason because they got the money, Tulane has really sort of insinuated themselves in the space of, we are the higher ed voice of a recovering city. And their president, Scott Cohen, is a really bright guy, and he's done a really good job of making sure that he's sort of front and center for these conversations. We, on the other hand, you know, haven't really had that. Our chancellor really fought hard for the school in the wake of Katrina. I suspect it might have taken a real toll on him. And this is a guy who went in a rowboat with a couple of state troopers to like get, you know, manually get out all the drives that held all like the payroll information, the financial aid information, all that kind of stuff, because it was all living on campus. But in terms of managing the PR side, in terms of insinuating himself into the conversation, the University of New Orleans is the university for New Orleans and for the people of New Orleans, it hasn't quite got there yet. But the voices, the core elements of it exist, and it's probably up to me to a certain extent to shape them and to begin to really project at it. Schizophrenia? Yeah, I mean, the question, if you didn't hear it, was multiple tweeters on campus. And NC State is the gold standard of this. Anybody who's sort of followed this, really, NC State has this extraordinary aggregation of all these tweets, everything that's coming in. I find it actually overwhelming. I'm sure some people love it. I try to follow it, and I don't know enough about the institution to feel like I can really engage with it. But what they've done is really impressive. You know, we had a bunch of different people at IC tweeting, not so much at UNO. Actually, there are a few at UNO, but they're mostly just doing broadcast. But there are quite a few at IC. What I found is that if I engaged them, they sort of recognized that there was, you know, some voices are more equal than others. Once they realized, you know, that we were sort of the main thing, we would engage, and the stuff that mattered that they did, they would begin to sort of adopt the voice a little bit, and it became easier to then retweet it, push it out, get the messaging out there. So, you know, the thing is with social media, and I've been in social media a long time. I was at Bolt 10 years ago, long before Zuckerberg was out of his nappies. The thing about social media is it works best when people are already likely to engage in it. You know what I mean? If you're not comfortable with it, you can't really superimpose a solution on it. Someone says, you need to have this kind of person in there. It's kind of hard to go out and like, I'm going to, you know, purchase one of these kind of people in the bookstore and stick them in front of the monitor and they will do as I say. It doesn't really work that way. I'm not entirely sure why it is. Most of us can be trained to do a lot of things, but for whatever reason, when it comes to being conversational, it's not something you can just sort of superimpose. I think it can work. I think the NC State model is a good example of a site where they've really taken the time to pull in all these different voices. I don't know what that sounds like institutionally. Like, I don't know if you could say that's an easily identifiable quality. You know, that is North Carolina State. I just know it sounds like a whole lot of people on that campus, you know, tweeting and musing and whatnot. So, yeah. Yeah, the question is basically, is it important for the institution to pick a given demographic, a given audience, like prospective students, and target them? That's actually a much bigger question than social media. That's again, a question of school identity. It's one that needs to be sorted out kind of at a higher level. Obviously, if you're at a school like Ithaca or a school like UNO, where enrollment really determines what the budget looks like every year, you're going to spend a little extra time making sure that recruitment and yield in particular, I find, because yield is where you're selling, and that yield is where the conversation really matters. You know, if people know about your school enough to apply, well, you can't really sway them. I mean, you can a little bit, but yield, I'll tell you a little yield story. There was a kid who had been really actively musing on Twitter about Ithaca College for the better part of a year, and he would compare it to other schools. He was thinking about RIT, some other places, and I loved it. He was complaining about the weather in Ithaca, but he was talking about going to RIT. I'm like, pal, you have no idea what you're getting yourself into. And it went on, and he would just say the quirkiest things about it, and like why he wasn't pressing the gas, because I would sort of initially be like, oh yeah, come on, you apply, it's great, the campus is beautiful, school's cool. And that was, that was like not having the effect that it usually has. And finally, Just in a moment of idle curiosity, I looked at his Twitter profile and I clicked. He had a blog, and he was from suburban Philadelphia someplace. He was a straight edge kid, and someone had told him that there was some crazy drug culture at Ithaca, and that it was just some, you know, everyone was just working the bong 24/7 and whatnot. Whereas it's actually only during daylight hours. No one knew that, but. And so he had it built up in his head that like, oh my God, I'm going to this place and there are all these crazy druggies and whatnot. And all I did was I tweeted him, if you're interested, here's some information about our substance-free housing. And the kid wrote back, he's like, I wouldn't have even known to ask that. You know, like you just, and he, so he ended up coming, which we all wish he didn't, because he was a pain in the ass after that. But uptight little schoolboy. But in the course of it, it was cool, because you know, this was, I had to think like a recruiter, but I also had to think about, you know, what's his life going to be like here? What's his, you know, how do you keep some of this? Because everybody knows, man, it's cheaper to keep them than to go get some more. And recruitment has always been a big issue for us there. So yeah, that was that. Right there.
Hi, greetings from Cornell University.
Woohoo! Woohoo! Come on, you guys learned it. It's Sweet 16, there's a little woohoo. I heard it.
I've got a couple of questions for you. One of them is about Twitter and sort of the younger generation. If you've done any research or aware of any good research about if these kids are using it, obviously you think so, but I'd like to hear more about that.
Yeah, and it's definitely the question. A few years back, that was sort of the joke with Twitter. It was like someone finally invented a social media that only fogies used, you know, and the kids weren't into it. I had a spectacularly drawn out discussion / argument with the new president at Ithaca College about Twitter one month, year. Wherein he could simply not get his head around the fact that there was this social media tool that didn't cater just to kids. Like he just was just assumed out of the gate that it didn't do it. And so it took a little while to get that point across. And then by the time I did, kids were starting to sort of grab onto it finally. Everything I've read is that it's trending younger and younger. Now that said, they're not the only audience. And at UNO actually, it's particularly important to recognize because we do have a lot of older students. Our median age is considerably higher than a lot of other state schools. It's traditionally a school for working class folks in New Orleans, many of whom work in jobs. It takes them a little longer to get there. It takes them a little longer to get through it. So that's a big piece of it, knowing that the demographic sort of isn't as rigidly defined as 17-year-olds. But their parents, who remain their biggest influencers, are actively engaged. And more, I would say each year at IC, I noticed the kids increasing by a significant factor. Not just a couple more trickling in, but by the time I left, they definitely held sway. They were definitely the main group that was responding, but that was also sort of just out there idly musing about the school and about conversations they wanted to have about the school but didn't know who to ask. Posting questions about financial aid on Twitter, posting them on Facebook, you know? So they're there. They're definitely there increasingly. It may come down to the sort of things that they're interested in. Kids who don't really necessarily know exactly what kind of program they want to follow seem to be really actively musing about, I don't know what to do in college. Can you help me, Ithaca? So.
Here, I do have some data. I am involved with the No Levity Expectation Survey, which we do every year of college-bound high school seniors. And I've been adding social media questions to that survey for the last couple of years. Last year when we asked that group, are you on Twitter or not, 8% said yes. This was a telephone survey throughout the country, college-bound high school seniors. When we asked that question the year before, it statistically did not even register. It was 3 out of over 1,000 respondents said they were on Twitter in 2009. Last year, it was like 85 out of the 1,000. So you can look at that any way you want. One, only 8%. The other way, look at how much it's increased over the course of a year. So we will be asking that question again next springtime.
Did you parse your data as to whether or not they were college? They were necessarily college bound?
They are college bound. Yeah. At least, you know, by the definition of as good as we can tell.
Right.
And that's country. We actually see some variation in terms of demographics, both geographic and ethnic demographics. So
yeah, and that's true for a lot of tools. Like, I mean, I think I waited just long enough to move down south for MySpace to die off. Thank God. So I don't have to deal with that. But if I'd gone a year or two earlier, they'd have been insistent about yep. MySpace. So
and MySpace still exists in the Southwest.
And it absolutely yep. does. And there are schools, all the schools that ever did anything with it that was remotely successful were, you know, in the South. You know, Auburn had a huge page. Probably still does.
Okay, we have time for a couple more questions. Let me
way over on the side there.
Do you focus primarily on, well, obviously Facebook and Twitter, but are there any other social networks that you're looking at or, I mean, there's YouTube and others, but
some,
what's
yeah.
coming down the road, et cetera?
You know, YouTube is one that, YouTube was a little tricky at IC because it wasn't always clear exactly whose shop it was sitting in. There were some instructional technology people who had it. We would try to work together. Sourcing was a little hard. It was a little hard to get good video source material for people. There's a lot of video on campus. Obviously, it's got a huge film production, but people are a little territorial about it. As you'd expect, it's their work. So I've primarily focused on Facebook and Twitter. You know, the rubber hits the road sooner there. There's a lot. It's very democratic tools, very easily accessible. I'd actually, this year, hoped to put together something on location-based media, and then Tim Neckritz and a bunch of other brilliant people beat me to it, and we'll do it exponentially better than I ever would. I also couldn't figure out, at IC, it was like, there were like five people, you know, who were on Foursquare. And like, you become, you know, mayorships changed, it was like a banana republic, you know, like, I'm just, you know, one coup after another, you know. So I sort of missed out on having an opportunity to do that. I had a student worker, and she went to South by Southwest and came back, oh my God, Foursquare is amazing, everybody's involved, people all over the place. I'm like, yeah, you know, you couldn't fill a bathroom on this campus with the people who are using it, so it's not worth it. But it's something I'm definitely interested in because I know it's going to happen. It's going to, you know, especially in a place, you know, UNO, campus is still recovering from the storm, you know, the area around it was actually much worse hit. It's hard to find lunch, you know, so good location-based media could sort of enhance the living experience there. All right, one more.
Yeah, one more question.
One more.
Do you post simultaneously to Facebook and Twitter the same message, or do you have a slightly different tenor or voice?
A little different. The voice does Facebook. Sort of modulate based on what kind of conversation you're likely to get into. You know, Twitter remains Twitter, and it's still going to be kind of brief and punchy and whatnot. You can get a little more involved in Facebook, and I certainly tended to. And the tone would be a little more engaging in the sense of welcoming, like, you know, expanding the conversation for that space. So it does alter a little bit. I would try and mix up the actual message so it isn't an identical post, just for the sake of my own sake. I don't know why. It just seemed like the right thing to do. Okay, hey guys, thanks a lot. I know it's early in the morning and we're all a little sleepy, especially me, but thanks for coming down.